This is Dojo Live, Tech Without Borders, stories that bring us together. Hello and welcome to Dojo Live this Thursday, July 6th, 2023. My name is Kim Lantis and it's my pleasure to be co-hosting with America Guerrero today.
Hey, everybody.
Hey. And of course, our guest of honor is Bryson Bort, CEO of Scythe. Bryson, I can already tell this is going to be a really, really fun conversation. And thank you so much for joining us today.
I like that you can't do it with a straight face while I'm a full unicorn. And I dare say I'm your first literal unicorn that has been on the show.
I dare say you are. Be forewarned, my five-year-old's probably going to interrupt the show and she'll barge in. And I'm pretty sure she's going to have some jealous vibes here as she sees you.
Well, we can hook her up with a sticker pack. And then for those of you who are going to be in Vegas for Black Hat, we will be having a refreshed coloring book.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I'm so interested in understanding the inspiration behind the unicorn as your mascot as we dive into the threats in cybersecurity today, what's behind it and what can be done about it. But before we do get into the specifics, we'd love to know your story, not the Scythe story, but the Bryson story. What's your story? What are you passionate about? And what's led up to your time as CEO with Scythe?
Yeah, sure. So I went to West Point because I wanted to serve the country. Everybody who graduates from the U.S. Military Academy is automatically commissioned as a second lieutenant in the U.S. Army. So I was an Army officer. I got out as a captain. I wandered the world for a bit, the way I described that part of my career. And then I got recruited into the intelligence community. I was very successful. And the way I describe it is every golden cage rusts. When you're good at something, success starts to bring you back to earth. And in this case, it was because I wasn't doing fun things anymore. I spent more time sitting around mahogany tables arguing with staff about not messing with my teams. And I was like, all right, you know what? I can do this on my own. So 10 and a half years ago, I quit and founded a consultancy named Grim. Does penetration testing. I think what makes Grim a little bit different is literally you name it, we've done it. Most pen testing companies do network penetration testing or web apps, whereas we do everything. We've done cryptocurrency, we've done cars, we've done satellites, we've done drones.
Wow.
And that leads to, in 2016, Target came to me. And I think everybody knows the story of Target. Well, the prologue to the 2012 breach was they built a world-class security organization. And the problem every world-class security organization or any organization has, hence the topic here, is you can still get hacked, right? You will get breached. It's really a question of time and adversarial effort more than it is anything that you can or can't do. And so how do you continue to find effectively the edge of the rainbow of your exposure and the potential risk that you have? Yeah, you like that? We're going to keep going back with unicorn. Yeah,
I'm digging it.
And so they came to me and they asked me at Grim to build them a tool. And I was surprised there wasn't anything like that already on the market. And I went back to them, like, well, I could build you this, or what if I co-invested and built you this entire platform that you could scale any threat you ever wanted on your own terms? Can I keep the intellectual property though? Because that sounds like a market idea. Like I've really got this before. So that was the birth of what we call Project Crossbow, which was an R&D project that we co-developed with them for 2.5 years. Along that path, I learned I don't know very much about commercial software sales and development. So I brought in some investors who do know what they're doing. So Ron Gula, who co-founded Tenable, and Dmitry Alperovich, who co-founded CrowdStrike. And we spun Scythe out of Grim. And that's what I've been doing full time for the last 5 years. So inevitably, of course, why the unicorn?
We got Grim, we've got Scythe, which isn't necessarily a happy, you know, connotation. And then we got unicorns.
No. So Grim is all about change. It doesn't have to be dark. It's just understanding that change is inevitable and continuous improvement is the foundation of all business. And in security, as we described, you're constantly doing that because how else do you stay up with what's going on? And again, to the topic of the show, the continually changing threat. Who are they? Why are they? Mm-hmm. Stay tuned at 8 o'clock for what can kill you in your sleep. that was a news joke, not this.
I caught it.
I'll do all the jokes and then I'll make sure people understand sometimes because I'm a little dry and folks are like, was he serious? I shared this logo. I hired a graphic designer from the Blizzard video game company and he came up with this. And this was really neat. And it was cool because it's the kind of logo that really like sticks out in your memory, which is good for brand awareness. And so as I'm spinning out Scythe, I'm like, well, how do I find lightning in the bottle twice? Because a scythe is just a piece of wood and metal. It's not interesting. And what we used to do at Grimm is we would do an annual t-shirt contest for DEF CON. So DEF CON is the largest hacking conference in the world. And one year I came up with the idea. I'm all ready with like my props. I came up with the idea of a Grim Reaper riding a unicorn because I just thought it was really funny, like the juxtaposition. And so the design philosophy, I call it the Disney villain, is the adults all laugh and get the joke like, that's a Grim Reaper riding a unicorn. And the kids are just like, it's cute.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Simba, Hakuna Matata. So I was like, well, this was a really big hit as a design. Huh, unicorns. And that's where I created the Scythe logo. So we do the unicorn with the scythe for scythe. And it's on our stuff.
We love it.
And then, of course, I mean, I'm the spokesperson in the face of scythe. So why not lean into the bit? So I will dress up as a unicorn.
I caught that one too.
So America is down in Cancun where it's very hot. I'm in St. Petersburg, Florida, where it's also very hot. I have a bunch of custom hoodies that I had made that I'll wear in different colors to highlight what I'm talking about. But those get kind of warm. So this is my summer unicorn outfit.
I love it. And I think it's interesting too, the unicorn juxtaposition with something like a scythe, right? That doesn't really fit. But at the same time, isn't that sort of what cybersecurity is all about? Like it can look unimposing, like non-threatening, and yet there's this strikeable, deadly component, right? That you need to be at the ready.
So what I call it is we have collective existential angst in our industry. Part of that from the people side is the folks who come into cybersecurity, I tend to find are very problem oriented, but at the same time, they want to solve it and you can't. Nobody has solved cybersecurity. So the existential angst is kind of like, where am I compared to everybody else? And as Friday evening approaches on a 3-day weekend, is there going to be an incident? I'm going to lose my weekend.
Yeah, for sure. And I think with that, it's a really great lead into the questions we're hoping to answer today. What are we going to be talking about more specifically, America?
We're going to talk about what really is the threat in cybersecurity, a closer look. Who is behind the security breaches we read about? What are the motives and what does it look like? Why do breaches keep happening and what can companies do about it? So please share with us dragons, unicorns, evil fairies. What is the answer?
Totems, symbols, metaphors, mascots, those will entertain you, but they're not going to fix your problems. So who is behind this? There's really two camps. And the first part, which I think is still kind of hard to understand, is because we run businesses. And in business, we don't think about another government coming after us. Why would they, right? I'm just running a business. I'm making popsicles. I sell brownies. And the only reason I even care about information technology because I didn't start my business making the world's best cookies because I wanted to get into IT. Information technology is what allows my modern business to scale, right? How else do I make cookies in all these locations and handle the supply chain and logistics and the sales?
Yeah, every company is a tech company these days.
Every company is a tech company when you get down to it, but that's not why they're in business. But that same tech that enables that business is what makes them the target. And so the fact that Russians are going to support ransomware gangs, they're going to come after you. Why would that have been on your bingo card for creating a cookie company? But that's the world we live in. And so the threat really is mostly, what we would call colloquially nation state. So Russia, China, Iran, and China, China gets counted twice. Why not? Russia, Iran, China, North Korea. And what's unique about that is it's not always just them coming directly. They also have collaborate with criminal elements. So most of the motives are actually criminally related, because cash is why ransomware became such a big deal. If you want to dig in more to that, I did a keynote with Chris Krebs back when he was the director of the Cybersecurity Infrastructure Security Agency in 2020 at RSA conference. And we predicted the national security implications of ransomware, which unfortunately have come true. And that's, I think, what most folks are worried about, because it's ransomware isn't the, and I'll use the Chinese example of like, hey, we are trying to steal every piece of intellectual property that we can get our hands on so we can bring our economy ahead to compete globally. But your business stops, right? The cookies machine shut down. The office computers stop, right? You can't do business anymore. And hence the ransomware, because I'm holding your operations ransom until mm-hmm. you pay me to do something.
And then the fear of no guarantee. Like, what do I do now? Do I pay? And even if I do pay, do I actually get my stuff back? And then what?
Right? Yep. Well, and so the other funny little piece of that is, because all of the engineering that they do goes into the ability to break in and to effectively ransom you. The decryptor, which is the code afterward to undo it, that is not well engineered. So yeah, going to your point, those things don't always work or work well.
Yeah, that's terrible. So we've got the idea of, you know, motives, what it might look like, and this idea of why does it keep happening? Like, if there's this, you mentioned earlier in the show, you know, this constant change, this in business and everything. Why is this really no different, or is it even faster? What does this look like in terms of scale and speed?
Yeah, so macro level, until about 7-8 years ago, the US government was not getting involved in this. The US government was like, we will protect our assets, private industry. You're on your own. Good luck with that. And well, so
if you don't want regulation, fine.
Regulation. I mean, but if you think about how, I mean, this stuff doesn't just appear, it comes over the internet. And the internet has all of these touch points and visibility, and private industry was effectively left to its own devices to protect itself from that. And that hasn't worked so well. So this is where you start to see things like I talked about CISA earlier with Chris Krebs, and now Jen Easterly is running it. I mean, that agency is only 4 years old. And yeah, I know, right? Exactly. It's like, wait a second, the domestic agency that's responsible is 4 years old.
And the internet's been around since, I mean, widespread. I remember it coming about in the 90s when I was in middle school, right?
Mid-1990s is when the internet, you want even more milestones of this stuff that's interesting? So yeah, internet being widespread, really mid-90s. Firewalls. So what's a firewall? Firewall is a way to say my network is different from your network, right? It's just a simple, like, not everything can just come through both ways. Those were not commonplace until 20 years ago. Until 20 years ago, we didn't segregate
halfway through from then till now.
Yeah. And then the reason I like the story of Target is not to pick on Target, because it could have happened to any company, but because that was the next milestone where cybersecurity writ large took a jump forward in understanding the threat at the business level. Because it's not a question of do the nerds get it? It's do the mm-hmm. business folks who are willing to make, you know, invest in it and make compromise, because this cost, security has a cost. And so that was where Target in 2013 changed that game. So it's really about the modern cybersecurity ecosystem is effectively 10 years old. And that's why it was never designed to be this way. And we're going backwards with things that we can't change and trying to fix it.
Mm-hmm. We're going background, but there is also a next level in the cybersecurity space, right? So we need to learn from the past, but we also need to learn what is coming. So how do you do that?
Sure. So I'll simplify an attack into three phases. I'm sure many of the viewers here have heard of different attack models. Probably the most common was the Lockheed Martin kill chain. Going back to where you were like, grim seems kind of dark. The same, I don't like using militarized language in cyber. And it's not even that helpful for a business to look at. Then the more common one, which is, again, I think another milestone, is the MITRE Corporation created a framework called ATTACK, ATT ampersand CK, so ATTNCK. And that really became widespread in 2018. And that was the first time we had this ability to have a common vernacular to understand all of the components of what an attack consists of. But it's really good for practitioners to be able to talk amongst themselves. That doesn't help a business kind of ground an overall thinking around it. And so I created what I call the BAM model, Bryson's attack model, BAM. There's only three phases. There's only three things we got to worry about. And I can explain it in plain English.
And I'm guessing it's an acronym.
So first is reconnaissance, right? If I am
it's not an acronym.
No, BAM is the acronym, Bryson's attack model, BAM.
I got it.
The blank look isn't fake. Nothing's going to be that complicated. I keep everything very simple. I'm also great at birthday parties. So reconnaissance. I am a thief and I'm looking at this neighborhood. And I'm going, all right, what's the best house to break into? All right, that one looks pretty good. Oh, yeah, I like the cars in the driveway. So do they have security? What's their pattern of life? Who's then, you know, who's where? When do they go to work? And so I recon and I build out my whole target package of what does that house look like? And this is what the hackers do on the internet as well, right? Like I go to LinkedIn and I understand who works at the company, who are their names, what are those relationships? Now I have the ability to do social engineering for the next phase, right? How do I break in? So initial access, how am I breaking into this company? Because once you're on the inside, it's a very different problem set. So how do I break in? Well, for the thief, this is where they never lock that window. I'm going to climb through that window. Or I know how to pick that lock. I'm going to pick that lock. We as an industry are really held up on this space because this is the prevention protection phase from us defensively. Why wouldn't I want to keep the thief out? When the reality is, no matter how much money we pour into it, you're never really able to do that. So I'm not saying that hygiene and training isn't important. I am saying that that exposure management and that piece is going to be, you know, trying to catch a rainbow. You're never going to do it.
It's necessary, but not enough.
It's necessary, but not enough. And again, the hackers themselves, the threats, aren't doing anything very complicated. The most common approach is email, right? Phishing and business email compromise. I'm tricking you through fraud. I'm tricking you to click on something. Or your company is really hard to break into. So I'm going to just go and hit the mom and pop shop that does, you know, a contract service for you and has access in. This one, I'm actually take a quick segue. This is my favorite story in cybersecurity.
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. Why come at you when I can go through there and they have access in? And this is my favorite story. Back in 2014, the Sands Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas was hacked by the Iranian Revolutionary Guard to tens of millions of dollars. So what happened here? So Sheldon Adelson, who is the founder of Sands, made some disparaging comments about the Iranian regime. And so the Iranians were like, well, we're going to get you. But as you can imagine, a casino, which handles, hundreds of millions of dollars, is literally Fort Knox, both physically and from a cybersecurity perspective. Well, so how did they get in? Well, they have all these entertainment things. And one of the things that was there is they had this multi-million dollar fish tank. So if you think about a multi-million dollar fish tank, that's an expensive proposition that I don't want my fish to die. One, that's expensive. And two, it doesn't look good. So we want to keep the fish alive. And I'm not paying somebody to sit there full time and check the water quality. So I'm going to hire, a mom and pop shop that specializes in taking care of fish. And they can't sit there all day. So we're going to put sensors in that they can monitor remotely to be able to take care of the fish. Well, it didn't occur to anybody that those sensors might also have a connection into the core Sands network. So the Iranian Revolutionary Guard broke into this mom and pop shop over the internet, into the sensors in the fish tank, and then that's how they were able to pivot into the Sands Hotel and Casino network to cost tens of millions of dollars.
Like Ocean 11.
Is that like the name Ocean's of the 11, but, with hackers.
Wow.
And the idea of just even the amount of thought or time, the reconnaissance that maybe had gone into that. Like, let's look at every angle. And it's crazy to me because this is a hacker's job, right? This is what they're doing. And it's not our full-time jobs, really, or most of us, to be thinking about every single angle.
Scenario. And even if you have that control that is either preventing or able to detect the behavior that you want to, well, that's really hard to do too,
It and is. So what right. do we do?
Well, so this is the final phase, right? So you, and this is where I want to highlight that while that story was fantastical, the back to the metaphor of the thief, they pick the lock, the door opens. So what, right? I can't stop that, but also you haven't done anything to me yet, right? You haven't gotten in and stolen my car. You haven't got to the second floor and broke into that safe and took the money out, which is the third phase, right? The third phase is once I'm in, now what, right? That employee that I fished, well, now I look like that employee inside your network. That's what makes this so hard to find me is I'm not running around with a mask like on your computers. I look like you. I've become your employees. I become your suppliers. I become you. And so the trick is I'm not bringing special stuff to the game. I'm using the assets that are already in your network. I'm using your computers that talk your way with the privileges that they have. Rarely do I ever need to do anything more than that. And why would I? Because that makes it more burdensome and expensive for me to maintain my operational security through my campaign to accomplish what I want to accomplish. And so that post effect side, that's what we specialize in Scythe, is that's where the greatest business value is. And it's also not an unlimited environment. There's only so, again, the computers you have talking the way they talk is the chessboard. Now the trick is, what's my ability to realistically and safely and at scale and with collaboration share all of those potentials in a way that's useful for me, the business, to improve? And that's what our platform does, is we recreate all of those behaviors in a simple and safe way. So if you're a sophisticated operator, you can build your own stuff, and it's like a Lego box. Once you build a Lego, it works with all the other Legos. So you can continually grow. So America, back to your question, how do we stay up with the latest thing? You can stay up with the latest thing yourself. And there's not a lot of novelty in that space. The way they break in is most of the novel component. What's they do afterward? It's actually a lot of the same stuff. Just nobody has found a way to be able to replicate the way we do all of that stuff that's in a useful way repeatedly. The second part is, well, most companies don't have the sophisticated red team operator to drive this kind of stuff. So they're like, well, how am I supposed to use your platform? This is where we make threat intelligence useful. So threat intelligence is, America, right, directly to your question, how do I stay up with the latest thing? Most threat intelligence is very basic machine readable stuff. Hey, we saw 6 months ago an analyst catch a malicious campaign coming from these IP addresses. So we're going to deny list those. The actual malware was this file hash signature. So we know that's definitely bad. That's the basics of threat intelligence. And as we know, that doesn't help us, because all it does is stopping the basics at the bottom that are already aged by the time they get to us. It doesn't allow us to understand where do we stand with respect to the behavioral components of what these malicious actors look like. And so that's what our tool is doing, is we turned all of that logic into one button click. So we're looking at the latest stuff and we're going, all right, we're not sharing that stuff because you already are getting it and it's not that great. What we're giving you is, here's the logic and the behaviors. And so you don't have to understand that. We've already tested and driven it. You just pull that down with the platform and now you can run that and see where you stand with the latest threat. And the part that I like the most about this is, we're not in the classic offensive assessment problem of, hey, we're continuing to find all these problems for you. We're also showing you what already works. And that's, I think, the part that's missing too often in cybersecurity, is we're not giving credit where we've already been making an investment. Hey, that tool worked. Hey, that policy with that person, they caught it in this period of time and that worked for us. Like, let's show those wins and we can do that.
So it's, if I'm understanding this correctly, it's less about identifying the specifics and when you get to the behavior, even though hackers have breadth and they look at every angle, that's actually not as creative as it sounds. It's kind of the same game plan again and again and again. Once so you're identifying in. The yeah, game plan.
In, it's the same game plan. Over
rather
and over.
Than the players.
Yeah.
And that. All right.
That's I know. It's the kind of thing nobody ever talks about. Everyone's just like, oh, it happens all the time. And I just, you know, you have this feeling of they're unbeatable and, oh, they always win. And it's like, well, actually investing on that part of being able to identify them afterward, there's very little work that's been done on that industry-wide, and it's the weakest point for a threat campaign. The psychology, though, is we tend to try to invest in keeping them out, which, as we noted, is a losing proposition, which is why we keep losing.
Yeah. But I think there's this element of comfort, right? Like, don't come in my house. Like, I think it's more comforting to think, exactly, if you're going back to the house metaphor, like, my house is secure.
Yep.
And we want to ignore the idea of what it, the icky feelings of what it would be like if someone were to actually.
Yes. And I'm also thinking that it doesn't matter if you are a company who has like 500 employees or 10 employees, because the idea that you're protecting, the business that you're protecting, it's so valuable. So who are your users? Who are the companies that want to know about the solution?
Yeah, for sure. We've talked about bakers and cookie makers, but how do you, is there a limit for you in terms of a size, or are you able to help everyone?
Yeah. So one of the smartest people I know in cybersecurity is a woman named Wendy Nather. She's the CISO of CISOs over at Cisco. I had to practice saying that so I could get all the alliteration together. And she came up with this phrase of the poverty line in cybersecurity. So the haves and the have nots. Mm. And I have a derivative of that, that there's, I think, the haves, the kind of haves, and the have nots. And that sounds equal, but it's not. Most companies are have nots. The cookie makers, all of them are have nots. I mean, unless you're, you know,
Crumble, maybe.
Is that unless you're Unilever, right? Who has bought, like, you know, billion-dollar cookie businesses. Most people are the have-nots. And that's part of this challenge, because I don't believe they don't understand the threat. I think almost every, that's where, so I talked about Krebs and I calling out ransomware. And I wrote an op-ed with Dr. Paul Rosenzweig in USA Today in 21 after the Colonial Pipeline hack, because what that did is that turned ransomware into what I call a kitchen word. Your grandmother most likely has heard of ransomware at this point, which the silver lining of that means we get it. And so these have-nots, it's not that I don't think they don't get it. I just think they're going, where do I start? I need someone to help me.
And it's so scary sounding. It's complicated. Yeah, it's just like, it's easier to just trust that it happens to other people. Like, I'm small. Nobody cares, really.
Yeah. So I'm not a target. Well, ransomware made me a target. So everybody is a target. I mean, I'm buying a Microsoft or a Google Chromebook or an Apple Mac. Like, why aren't they just taking care of these problems? And the reality is, as we've discussed, is it's more complicated than that. And so the haves, there aren't that, I mean, we're talking like a fraction of a fraction, right? We talk the socioeconomics of this country of the top 1% or the top 0.1%.
We're talking targets.
Haves are even smaller percentage of the overall millions of businesses that there are in this company and there are this country. And those, you know, those anybody who's on the stock exchange is a have. They have the budget to be able to do something about this. And then the kind of haves are the folks who, they have enough money to hire a managed service security provider to get something, but they kind of get whatever they get. And at least they can afford that much. And then it precipitously drops off to the have-nots who got nothing. So our strategy is, we're a young startup. We're a late A round startup. We've got over 100 customers globally. Is we've been successful working with the haves. And I want to turn this tooling into something that is accessible to everybody. And it's not just, again, the ease of being able to find the problems, but also the ease of being able to fix those problems. And so our goal is as much of that automation and integration as possible, where my tool is just the unicorn in the background. You don't even have to worry about it. It just does what it's going to do. And so partnering with those managed service security providers and managed service providers to be able to offer something that is affordable because the tool's doing all the work.
Okay, so that's who your client really is, rather than the enterprise itself. It's the companies that help secure the enterprise.
Well, so that's where we're trying to go down market to those have-nots and those kind of haves, where because it's all kind of comes down to money, right? I can't afford a $50,000 red team or a penetration test, but maybe I can afford $500 a quarter for all of that to be packaged for me.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting. I mean, going back to your Las Vegas example, the truth is it's in the haves benefit to take care of the have nots, right?
You're jumping into something I've talked about before. And that is the fact that the interconnected nature of all of these businesses mean that the lowest hanging fruit is still makes you vulnerable, even if you're Fort Knox.
Exactly. You know, Bryson, we've come down to the last minute or so of our show today. I did want to ask you, in all of your experience, I mean, whether that's, you know, pre-cybersecurity with actual intel and military or coming up, what would be maybe the biggest word of wisdom that you'd give to somebody and say, this is what I've learned in all these years and I want to share it with you?
Sure. I think this applies to everything. It's not about the tech, it's about the people. And that I extrapolate that in a lot of ways. For this discussion, people are the largest risk surface area, and yet we keep throwing nerd solutions at nerd problems. It's people. And then conversely, I mean, going back to where you had talked about the fact that the haves should be invested in helping the have-nots, I think we as a society and as a community need to be doing that all for each other. And I think that there's too little empathy and support in the industry and in the world. And that's, so it all comes down to people. And one of our core values at Scythe is kindness, because I think, again, it comes down to people.
I love that. I love that. And that core value certainly aligns with rainbows and unicorns and, you know, the ideal that we're all kind of hoping for. Maybe not reach because it's hard to catch a rainbow, but doesn't stop us from trying, right?
There's a pot of gold there somewhere.
Somewhere. Perfect. Thank you so much, Bryson, for your time today and sharing all about your story and Scythe's story. Stick around, please, as we go off air. But before we do, we'd like to remind our viewers that we've got two shows coming up next week. Kicking it off on Wednesday will be Super Social with Jonathan Friedman. And then we've got Kibo with Barsan Mosafari, excuse me, and he's going to be talking all about, and I had this and then I lost it, hold on, he's going to be talking about machine learning to the rescue, and to the rescue of who? The data team, of course, how machine learning technology can help manage insane volumes of data and keep cloud costs in check. So be sure to catch that on Thursday, the 13th, right here in Dojo Live, 10 o'clock Pacific. Bye for now.
Check out past episodes, transcripts, blogs, and more on our website, dojo.nearsoft.com.